again. It is Monday already, and we have another episode of My Cancer Story podcast. Today, you're going to meet Lindsay Pursley. She is a friend of a friend. I found her through my friend Nicole. They became friends because they're both breast cancer survivors, as well as really into fitness. So she connected me with Lindsay. I'm so excited to introduce this episode to you guys. Lindsay is a three-time cancer survivor of osteosarcoma as a teenager, breast sarcoma, as well as breast cancer, which was ductal sarcoma stage 2. I really hope you enjoy this episode. I know I enjoyed speaking with Lindsay. She has this amazing outlook on life and is such a light to this world, so positive. And I really, really enjoyed meeting her and becoming a new friend of hers. Without further ado, here is the newest episode.
All right. Well, welcome to the podcast, Lindsay. I really appreciate you being here and scheduling the time to tell your story. And so Lindsay, I met through our friend, my husband and my friend, Nicole. Nicole set us up, and she basically said she has this friend in Northern California, which they kind of met through Instagram and through their love of fitness and also both being cancer survivors. And ultimately, Lindsay and I met through Instagram, and so we've been able to chat and then set up a time to have her tell her cancer story. So welcome to the podcast, Lindsay.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be here and just really honored to be able to share my story. And I think it's just so great that you are starting this podcast, because cancer patients and survivors need to know that they're not alone and that there is life after cancer. So
absolutely. That's perfect. So I found out through our little chats that you are a multi-cancer survivor. I believe, okay, so it's pediatric osteosarcoma, breast sarcoma, and also breast cancer. Is that correct?
Correct, okay. Yeah.
All right. From here, I'll just kind of like have you go ahead and go with your story. I guess let's start with the pediatric and also going into, you mentioned you have a genetic disorder as well. So we'd love to hear more about that. So I'll let you take it away.
Yeah. So my cancer journey started when I was 15. So I had a mass in my left thigh. And at the time, I was really active. I was playing soccer. I was dancing multiple days a week. I was kind of in gymnastics and swimming as well. And I had knee issues before, just bad knees in general. And my leg was in a lot of pain throughout the day. And I was taking, at 15, I was taking maybe like 8 ibuprofen just to get through the day. And that's a lot. I mean, I was a tiny little sophomore, and, just to be able to wake up and not be in pain. And it was one day after dance class, my mom was looking at my legs and she was like, your left leg comes out like very swollen. So we thought it was probably from my knee. Maybe I'd torn something and there was just swelling in there. And we went to, my orthopedic surgeon, who's actually a dear friend of ours. And he took x-rays, and I will never forget staring at that x-ray, because there was just this huge white mass next to my left femur. And unfortunately, my mom's mind went negative right away, because unfortunately I lost my father to brain cancer when I was about 5. So my mom, I think it was a nightmare, just like, I can't do this again. And I've always been a positive person. So I was like, Mom, it's probably just calcium buildup. Like, it's going to be fine. Like, I mean, I'm a healthy 15-year-old, you don't think that can happen to you. Mm-hmm. And the next day we went to South San Francisco, and I went through like every test under the sun, which, again, Miss Positivity, I was like, these scans are so cool. Like, tell me about what this scan is. Like, I did a full bone scan, so I saw my full skeleton, and wow. MRIs, and I was just so curious about it all. Mm-hmm. That positivity and that curiosity quickly went away later that day, when I was sitting in the doctor's office with my dad, my mom, my brother, and my grandmother, and I was told that I had bone cancer. And I mean, honestly, that moment will never leave my mind. Sitting there crying compulsively, like just, I couldn't stop. And it was, you know, I love doctors, but their bedside manner is not the best.
Yeah.
And I'm this little 15-year-old and I'm looking forward to like maybe going to prom with a junior and, you know, like my soccer tournament the following weekend. And in high school, your life is so, but like bubbled, and yeah, that was small. So far out of my bubble and just exploded. And this doctor was saying, you'll never dance again. You can't play soccer. Like, we're going to have to remove your entire femur. We have to start chemo right away. And, it's just, my world just stopped. And I just couldn't believe that it was happening to me. And, it was shitty. It was really shitty. And I wish it upon nobody.
No.
So that was a really tough, that's a really tough cancer. Had I been diagnosed a couple years prior, they probably would have amputated.
Really?
Yeah. So osteosarcoma, the treatments come such a far way, but usually it is a pediatric cancer. Mm-hmm. And if you're continuing to grow, they can't put in an implant that's going to grow with you. So a lot of the times they'll amputate.
Oh, okay.
I was old enough, and I mean, I was done growing, which for me, I was like, really 5'4", that's it. They were confident enough that I didn't need an amputation, cause it was pretty high up in the middle of my femur, which is a blessing.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would have done with that. But I started, I got my port in like 2 days later. And I started chemotherapy. I honestly didn't know. I think my parents were more anxious than I was. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, you don't, at that point, there was no social media. There was no, nothing. Like, you know, you can Google things, but I think that's a black hole.
Yeah.
And that will be one of my things I tell, like, if you're diagnosed, do not go on Google. Like,
that's
stay
like a recurring
away.
Theme. Everybody.
Oh my God. Stay away. You will just like, all of a sudden yep. you'll just be like, I'm dying. Like
yep. immediately you're going to die.
No. Yep. Yeah. No. So started chemo and I was on some pretty heavy meds, cisplatinum and methotrexate. So cisplatinum, is nasty and it is the color red. Well, at the time it was the color red. So to this day, I cannot drink Kool-Aid, like no, nothing red.
No red colors.
Like, I just, nope.
Wow.
And for being a pediatric patient, like I will say one of the best experiences ever, those nurses are angels on earth. They just make everything better and know how to make a child and her parents feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So they immediately, like when I looked at it, I was like, that's really scary. Cause you're literally watching this red bag drip into like flow into the tubes that are like in your chest and you just yeah. are sitting there, you're like, I'm being poisoned and it's not a great feeling. So they covered the bag with like a little smiley face balloon thing. and cisplatinum was hard. I went through, a couple rounds of that. And I was usually in the hospital for about a week. Mm-hmm. Getting that out of my system because it made me severely sick to the point of where I wasn't eating for 5 days at a time. I just couldn't keep anything down. So they wouldn't let me leave the hospital without me being able to eat. I usually had about a week to recover from that. And then I went back for methotrexate, which wasn't too bad. You just can't leave the hospital until you've cleared it out of your system. So they pump you full of fluids. So that was really nasty. So that was from April until August. And actually in August, they stopped chemo because I came up with like sepsis in my colon. So I had a colon infection. And my hospital could no longer care for me because my blood pressure kept dropping. And basically the sepsis in my colon was killing me. And I had no immune system. I was transferred to the Children's Hospital for about a week. I have no recollection of this. A couple of my parents' friends came in, to see me and said that I didn't even look like myself and that they came in to say goodbye because ultimately my hospital sent me to Children's Hospital to die because they couldn't take care of me anymore. I think that willpower plays a huge role in this. And I think my dad was watching over me and he was like, nope, not my little girl. Mm-hmm. So I came back, I bounced back from my colon, sepsis, and, they stopped chemo for a little bit to help me rebound.
Yeah.
I was just, you know, a tiny little 95 pound and they're like, we can't operate. Like she needs to have something on her. So they stopped chemo for a couple of weeks, which was so great. Cause I started to get like all this little peach fuzz back on my head. and then they did surgery and I had surgery on my first day of school, which would have been my first day of school, my junior year. So I was sitting in the hospital, you know, with this like huge incision down my leg and like writhing pain, looking at the clock and being like, I would be going to school today, starting my junior year. Like all my friends are going and I'm sitting here, you know, bald, 95 pounds. I can't walk. I can't move on my own. This sucks, but I'm here. I'm alive. My tumor kill was not great, which, again, just got into my head. And, my dad has a really vivid memory of me laying on the couch and we heard about the tumor kill, which was low. And I remember looking at my dad and saying, am I going to die? Because osteosarcoma spreads to your lungs and it can be pretty nasty from there. So they started me on a whole new regimen of chemo, which my oncologist called cleanup chemo. He's like, we just want to make sure we get everything out of your system. He was a godsend as well. My oncologist was just this amazing man with this amazing laugh. And I thank God every day that he was my oncologist, because I truly think him being so aggressive with everything is what made me survive, as well as my mom constantly checking my temperature, and if I came down with a fever, was rushing me immediately to the hospital. So
yeah,
most of our days from April 2002 to April 2003 were spent on the 10th floor of Kaiser Oakland pediatric ward. But my mom was so proactive and just so on top of my health she just is an angel as well. And she's been through so much in her life, and she is truly my hero in all of this. So that was 15. I obviously survived and I got to finish out my high school career, did my whole senior year, went to college, went to UCSB, college on the beach, and yes, enjoyed
and yes, scout show.
I am till the day I die. Yeah. Had so the jealous. best four years ever of my life. I had such a new zest for life and was like, I've been given this. So I had so much fun there, cried on graduation day cause I didn't want to leave. Met some amazing friends there and, just enjoyed it all. And then after graduation, I felt a lump in my left breast and I just immediately was like, I know
that you this went is there. Cancer. Yeah.
Yep. I was like, I just know that this is cancer. So my gynecologist was like, oh, it just feels like a cyst. We could probably drain it. So I went into a clinic and they tried to drain it and it was a solid mass. And I will not, like, that was the most painful experience. Like they kept trying to stab me in the chest to drain it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure this is a solid mass. Like, I don't think that you can drain this.
Yeah. Can you stop?
yeah. Couple days later, they pulled samples from it cause they couldn't drain it. And sure enough, it was a sarcoma. So it wasn't breast cancer. It was a breast sarcoma. So I'm 21 years old. I just graduated from college. I'm waitressing because I'm applying to go get my master's. And I was just like, I remember looking at my mom, like, I can't do this again. Like, I can't go through a year of chemo. Like, I can't, like, I was like, I can't do it. Like, I can't do that whole thing all over again. And, my oncologist at the time was like, yeah, we'll go through chemo. And I was just like, I can't do this. But then on top of that, they performed a mastectomy. And if anybody's listening, it's hard. It's really hard. They're taking a piece of you as a woman that makes you a woman. And at 21, I'm dating,
yeah.
And they weren't able to put my expander in because I didn't have enough tissue. So I was completely flat when I woke up and I thought I was supposed to have an expander in. So I was devastated.
So
and
they took the full breast.
They took my full left breast.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The sarcoma mass was about the size of a small golf ball. Sarcomas grow pretty quickly. So, eventually I got my expander put in, but I refused to do chemo again. I was like, I mentally cannot handle this again. And this is another piece that I want to tell anybody that's diagnosed, like, be your own advocate. Like, if you don't think that what your oncologist is recommending, like, ask for another opinion, go to a different hospital. My original oncologist had moved to Stanford, head of oncology. So I reached out to him in email and was like, look, I was diagnosed with a breast sarcoma. They just did a full mastectomy. I have clear margins. They want me to start chemo. I want your advice. And Kaiser referred me over to Stanford, and we got a second opinion. And my oncologist from my pediatric days was like, yeah, you don't need chemo. The sarcoma, the margins are clear. I feel safe enough with you, that you don't need chemo. Mm-hmm. So a second opinion is always like, I highly recommend it. Be your own advocate. You're the only one that's going to make things move for you. Mm-hmm. So be your own advocate always. So that was 21. And that was a very long experience between the expanders, the mastectomy, the expanders, and then getting implants in as well. And all the while trying to be 21 and
going and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Vegas and used an implant in my swimsuit. Like, it was just like, thank God my friends were so supportive and just rock star friends. It was tough. Like, even after that, I dated a couple men and, I was just so insecure about my chest. And still really am. I try to cover up as much as I can, but, thankfully my husband loves me and every piece of me. Way more comfortable with my body and all the scars as well. But it's tough. It's not easy.
No.
That's for sure.
I was just going to ask, it's kind of going back to, being like in high school with the osteosarcoma. How was it kind of like integrating back into school, into life, going back to friends? Like, I imagine you were treated differently. Just trying to catch up, like you missed a year. Were you doing like school from home? Like, it's just kind of a lot. You were forced to grow up very quickly and then also still be a kid and finish school. Like, how was that? What was that like?
So I did school at the hospital.
Okay.
So my mom, they gave me the option of, you can take the year off and then graduate the following year. And, that was not an option. I was like, I would feel so disconnected and just, I was like, I'm graduated in 2004. That's when I'm graduating. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not pushing. I was like, I can get through this. So I did, thankfully my high school let me do everything from home. A couple of teachers that were friends. I grew up in a small town. So a couple of teachers that were friends of our family would come to the house when I was well enough, to help tutor me and just make sure that I was understanding materials and not just trying to get through the work, but I was actually learning and retaining information because I was in AP Spanish, AP History, AP Government, and AP English. So,
oh my gosh.
It was crazy. And I look back and I'm like, why?
Almost like, wow.
Oh my gosh,
you're so smart.
It was a good distraction, I think.
Yeah.
But, it was hard. I mean, I would go back to school and and you know, I have a wig on and you don't have eyebrows or eyelashes and you're significantly skinnier. And, you know, I don't think at that age anybody really knew what to say, mm-hmm. or how to act. And, I just wanted to be treated just like who I was. Like, I didn't want anybody to think of me as like the cancer patient.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go back to school and just like sit in my seat and just be normal. It was really hard when I went to school after I went to school when I was feeling well my junior year and I was on crutches. And that was really hard because everybody's running around school and you're just moving so slow. And, you know, you see all your friends in their soccer uniforms and going to dance class. And it's hard. You feel like you were robbed.
Yeah.
Just a lot of feelings of unfair. Why me? A lot of friends fell out of my life. And I don't blame them. It's just, you know, how do you process that as a 15, 16 year old, when your life is so, you know, I mean, when you're a teenager, it's so it revolves around you.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will say that a couple of my best friends from childhood, from like diapers, stood by my side and would come visit me and, would pick me up and help me into their cars and visit me in the hospital. And, some of those girls were my bridesmaids when I got married a couple years ago and continue to be in my life and huge supporters of me, but it's hard. And I just, there's nothing that you can say to make it better. I think it's just, you just need to be there for them and talk to them about something other than cancer, because cancer is their life. And so it's hard. It was really hard. And it was a tough time. Your junior year is a tough year to go through that too.
Being a teenager is traumatic and hard enough. And then adding cancer on top of that is, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
But that is solid advice for someone at any age. Like if they do have a friend or family member with cancer, especially if it's a big one, a scary one, where they're doing radiation and chemo and they're really sick. It's just not to always talk about cancer because that is their life right now. And they just want to talk about other stuff or think about other things.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
I'm sorry to skip around, but did you end up going to get your master's after?
I did.
You did. What'd you get it?
I did. I got my master's in sports management from the University of San Francisco. Yeah. Okay.
I was looking at University of San Francisco for my master's. I did sports medicine. So they have a sports medicine program. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that's great.
It was always my dream to get into sports because I figured if I can't play them, I might as well work at it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's so great. So I guess we're at the point of not needing chemo for your breast sarcoma. When did breast cancer come along?
So breast cancer came along in 2016, I was diagnosed January 2017.
Okay.
But
quite a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Not related. This is where my genetic disorder comes into play. So all three cancers are like soft tissue. And I have a genetic disorder called Li-Fraumeni disorder. And, the abbreviation is LFS. And basically it's a genetic mutation. Many of my cells in the soft tissue, so breast, muscle, fat, and the scary one is brain, can turn malignant, if exposed to radiation. So, radiation is off the table for me for treatment. I can't really have x-rays anymore. That's where they think that the osteosarcoma came from, because I had so many x-rays on my left knee because they kept dislocating it and I had injuries to it. And then I had a ton of chest x-rays after osteosarcoma because the osteosarcoma can travel to your lungs. So the protocol was to scan my lungs with the chest x-ray to make sure that my lungs were clear. So they think that's where the breast sarcoma was from. And then breast cancer, I just feel, unfortunately, like it's just one of those, I've connected with so many young women who've been diagnosed, and I just feel like it's just luck of the draw or unluck of the draw.
Yeah.
So I got engaged, November of 2016, a month after my 30th birthday. And I was planning my wedding and getting excited, and I went dress shopping, and then I got the phone call. I was actually on my way to my friend's bachelorette in Austin, Texas, and the doctor called me, and I had just gotten off the airplane, and I knew the phone call was not good. Because I just had my gynecologist again. So ladies, go to your gynecologist, like do your self checks, like in the shower, like don't just feel it on the first, like feel it every shower.
Great advice.
She actually felt, the small node, about the size of like, maybe like a tiny bean. And it was actually on the same side that I had my mastectomy, which I was like, wait, there's nothing there. I don't get it. And she goes, well, we leave the milk ducts, which I was super confused because they've removed everything, like including my nipple on my left side. So I was like, why would you leave milk ducts there then? I was diagnosed as a ductal carcinoma stage 2. And, but I got the phone call, like I said, they did the biopsy. And I got the phone call as I was in the Austin airport on my way to my friend's Airbnb for her bachelorette. And I walked in the front door and I was like, yeah, I'm so excited to be here. And she was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I don't want to ruin your bachelorette weekend, but I just got diagnosed with cancer for the third time.
Oh, Jesus.
And my mom called and my brother called because I told them, and they're like, do you want us to fly you home? I'm like, no, I need this weekend. I need to enjoy it. Like, I don't want to deal with it right now. Mm-hmm. And my friend was like, what do you need? I was like, I need you to not focus on me. Like, this weekend is about you. And she's just another angel in my life. But, so this time was so different. I wasn't just fighting for me. I was fighting for my future husband and myself. And this was really hard for me. I was like, I'm getting married in a year. I can't go through chemo and lose all my hair. And, it was just like flashbacks to my high school days again. It's like, you have this expectation of what you want. Like my senior pictures, I had this like pixie cut and I was like, oh God, like why? Like, you know, like you're all through high school. You're like, oh, my senior picture should be so gorgeous. And I was like, oh, I look like Peter Pan.
Oh, no.
So I had just gone and tried on wedding dresses. I was like, I can't do this again. So it was 6 rounds of chemo, surgery, and then 6 rounds of chemo. But again, I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to let cancer take this from me. Like, we're still going to plan our wedding. We'll push it to spring of 2018. And I was like, I'm going to figure out a way to save my hair because I know that there's a way. And I think for me, it was also, I didn't want my husband to have to see me. Like, I just feel like when you lose your hair, you really take on the cancer patient, and that's really hard for other people to see and handle and deal with. And as well as yourself, like, it's so hard to look in the mirror and like, you don't have eyebrows, you don't have eyelashes. Like, you get this kind of like gaunt, like yellowy look on your face, and then you have no hair. And it just kind of like, you look in the mirror and you're like, who is this person? And you just lose so much of yourself, and you don't feel like yourself, and you lose your self-confidence. And I was like, this is not happening to me the year before I get married. Like, nope, not happening. So I researched, cold caps.
Mm-hmm.
So I froze my,
too. Yeah.
Froze my head to save my hair.
Yeah.
Call me vain, but no. I did it.
No.
And thank God for my husband. Like I just love him so much. I mean, this is our first year as an engaged couple, and he had to change my cold caps out every 20 minutes. We had to go every night, the night before chemo, to get, dry ice. He had to pack all the caps. He had to, and then 3 hours post chemo, he had to do them all. He sat by my side through every infusion. I mean, if there's any testament to like how our marriage was going to go, like that was it. Like everybody's like, well, you know, I want to go through something hard before. Well, his thing was when we got engaged, he's like, we just haven't been through anything really challenging. And then, he got what he asked for.
Yeah.
I mean, just going through that with him just made me realize like that he is just the perfect person for me and just was going to be there for me every step of the way, no matter what life brought, both of us. But, so that was tough, but I was honestly, once again, I love nurses, like especially oncology nurses. My first nurse is hooking me up for chemo for my first chemo from breast cancer. And my head immediately goes to like osteosarcoma chemo mm-hmm. when I was viciously sick and lost all this weight. And I mean, I'd been working out and sweating for the wedding. Like I was ready to look like fierce in my wedding dress. And I was like, great. Now I'm going to be like this emaciated little like string bean. I was just like, how am I supposed to be sick all the time? Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And, the nurse was like, looked at my chart about what I was going to get. And she's like, oh girl, this is gonna be a walk in the park for you. She's like, you've already had some platinum and methotrexate. She's like, this is not going to be like anything like that. She's like, you'll be able to breathe through this. And, I had some nausea, but nothing compared to, what I went through mm-hmm. previously. It was a totally different experience because I sat in like recliner chairs with like a bunch of other people getting infusions in an infusion room. So it was just like such a different experience.
Yeah.
And you also go in there as like a little 30-year-old and everybody else is, you know, 50 and above. And it's, you get the looks and the sympathy, like, oh, she's so young, like, you know, and, so that's hard because you're looking around the room and there's nobody that you can relate to. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I just brought my headphones and froze my head and chilled out. but I had 6 rounds of chemo. I lost a significant amount of my hair. But thankfully mm-hmm. I had a thick head of hair to start with. So, it wasn't super noticeable.
It's really good.
My taste was so robbed from me. I mean, everything tasted like metal. It was so gross.
Does it still or no? Like,
no, it came back.
Okay.
Yep. It came back, but it was just like, nothing tasted good. Chicken made me like physically sick. So I found like frozen Jamba Juice smoothies, which were like my jam, and I put protein powder in them. They put me on steroids, which I was not happy about at all. Mm-hmm. Because that really makes you, put on weight and bloat a little bit. And I was just like, in my head, I'm like, I am getting married in like a year. But for me that I knew that they were there for a reason. And, you just have to know that you can fight through anything and rebuild what is lost. So that was breast cancer. And, I'm not going to say it was an easy journey, but compared to what I've been through, it was easier. I think the toughest part for me was being told before I was even married that we would not be able to have children.
That's tough.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there newly engaged and, I mean, God bless my oncologist. He's very conservative and very black and white. Mm-hmm. But he's also a man.
Yeah.
and he's sitting there. My surgeon was a woman and God bless her soul. But, he was sitting there, he diagnosed me and he's like, we'll start chemo in a week, put your port in, we'll do surgery first. Here's your surgeon. And, he left the room. I was in tears because I'm like, I'm supposed to get married. I can't. And she goes, you can freeze your head, save your hair. You'll look beautiful at your wedding. You can still get married in May. And she's like, and I'm going to refer you to a fertility clinic. And she's like, because we can push chemo a couple weeks for you to see if you can do some egg retrievals.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I'm so thankful she said that. And, it was tough. I had to go home and tell my fiance, you know, look, this is what we're dealing with.
You've hardly started your life together and you're basically just handed this kind of ultimate decision. Like you have mm-hmm. to freeze your eggs or nothing. That's, mm-hmm. that's so hard.
Mm-hmm. And He's a researcher. So I woke up in the middle of the night and he is researching IVF and freezing your eggs. And he was like, we just don't have time. Like the chances of you, you know, being on your cycle, he's like, we just don't have time to do this. This isn't going to work out for us. We're not going to be parents. And I just kept telling him, like, you have to have faith. Like this, we just, the worst thing we can, the least that we can do is go talk to the fertility clinic. Mm-hmm. So we went to the fertility clinic and I had just finished my cycle and she was like, well, let's see what your ovaries look like. She goes, because I don't know what cancer did or chemo did to you when you were 15. Mm-hmm. So she went in, wand and all, and I was super, super, super fertile. She was so excited. She was like, I've never seen so many eggs. She was making me laugh. And she was like, we can start you on meds to mature some of the eggs and do an egg retrieval. She's like, we can push chemo. She's like, I'll let your oncologist know. And we can monitor your hormone levels because my breast cancer was a hormone-related breast cancer, HER2 positive. And so we were able to retrieve 42 eggs. We fertilized 19 of them. We sent, I think, 11 for testing. They also tested for my genetic disorder. And then 5 of them came out crystal clear. They don't have my leaf remaining disorder. So we have 3 little boys and 2 little girls. Just chilling.
Wow.
Yes.
Just chilling, straight up chilling.
Just chilling, straight up chilling. So we found that out, and that was just a huge blessing, you know, to know that we have the chance of having children, and that our children are healthy and won't have to deal with cancer. And that for me is the best blessing that I can give my children is a life without cancer and going through what I went through. And so, yeah, that was a really emotional and very tough experience, and dealing with IVF and not being able to carry right now is really tough. 'Cause I just turned 34. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to be a mom. You know, yeah. We've been married for 2 years and I'm ready to be a mom. And I mean, that'll be another journey that I share about, but, it's tough. It's really tough. And I know that there's a whole network of women out there that are cancer patients and did the IVF and are just waiting. Because now I have 2 more years, till I can carry.
Okay.
I'm in medical menopause. Super fun. I sweat my life away.
Oh my God.
I don't have my cycle. I haven't had my cycle since 2016. Cause I'm in menopause basically. Yeah. So, I have the hot flashes. I had some crazy mood changes. But it's really cleared up my skin, which has been nice.
Finding the positives.
not having my cycle. I mean, I'm not going to complain. It's not like, oh, I might start today. I should probably bring tampons. So it's been kind of nice. So when it comes back, I think I'm going to be like, oh man,
like,
I really miss this. Didn't miss this.
What's up with the cramps? Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So medical menopause at 34, or like basically 30 to 34 has been interesting. But most of my mom and her friends can relate. So when I start sweating, they're like, oh yeah, me too.
Just one of the girls.
Yeah. It's just hard because like, yeah. You know, I'll be at work and just start sweating. People are like, are you hot? I'm like, yeah. Like, it's just like a fire that rages from your back. And it just like, oh, and my friends have touched me and they're like, oh, you're having a hot flash. I was like, yeah, please don't touch me. Yeah.
Like, sweating.
So hot and gross. So yeah, that was that. I am now no evidence of disease. I just had a full body MRI recently and I am totally clean and in the clear. So hoping to keep Yay. That up for the remainder of my life.
Congratulations.
Thank awesome. You. Thank
how,
you.
How often do they have to monitor? Obviously, like the further along you go, the more they push it back. But like how often are you getting like blood work or getting scans or anything like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. So my protocol is I get a yearly full body MRI. I also get a brain MRI and a chest MRI annually. I am in constant contact with my oncologist. That is my another piece of advice that I would give cancer patients is like, it is up to you to stay on top of your health. Mm-hmm. Like your physician, yes, is there to assist you, but he also has a plethora of other patients. So it is up to you to say, okay, I had my scan in January. When is my next scan? And am I having a breast MRI this year? Are we doing my brain MRI? Do I need to get blood work done? Like be on top of it because you are the only one that is in charge of your own health. 100%. If something doesn't, if something doesn't feel right, speak up. Don't be like, oh, it'll go away. Yeah. No. Like the amount of emails I've sent my oncologist for the dumbest things. I mean, but you never know if it's not, you know what I mean? Like I had migraines a couple years ago and I emailed him and was like concerned about that. And he immediately got me in and got a brain scan done. And he was like, everything looks fine. It might be medication based. But speak up, like be your own advocate and speak up for your health because you are the only one that knows if something does not feel right. And you need to speak up for that. So I just, don't wait.
Yeah. And 1,000% on that. Yeah. Doctors are only human too, because not saying they're not perfect. Like you said, they have so many patients. So some things can fall through the cracks, like your blood work, like they just didn't notify you. Like, I don't know if you still have Kaiser, but I have Kaiser and
I do.
I was like, I've emailed my doctor several times to be like, am I due for blood work? Usually I get pinged for it. Mm-hmm. But, like one time, like it was actually right after my thyroidectomy. I was like 2 days later, I was like, should I be getting Synthroid? They're like, yeah, go to the pharmacy and pick it up. And you know, it's already there. But you know, it's just like little things that if you're not paying attention, they might not necessarily know to ping you as well.
Right.
So I think that's a huge thing, whether you think it's stupid or not, you know, just ask the doctor. So you're talking about, like, you kind of mentioned food along the way and like doing like the protein and everything like that. With, you know, being a cancer survivor, 3-time cancer survivor, like how has that affected, because I know I see you work out every day and it's super inspirational. How has that affected your fitness and nutrition? Like, what's your diet like now? Like how proactive are you with, I guess, taking a lot of your health into your own hands with through fitness and nutrition? What do you do?
So I mean, for me, working out has always been just part of my life. I was an athlete growing up, as I mentioned. And I mean, college, I did the whole like afraid of weights, cardio bunny thing.
Isn't that funny? It was like, I'm 2 years older than you. And that was like a total thing. Like,
no, it was.
I don't want to get bulky. I cannot get bulky if I tried.
Well, I just love lifting and I hate cardio now.
Me too.
Yeah. it took me years to get off the cardio bunny machine and realize that I needed to lift. And that was just my outlet, like just going to the gym and working out. And after every surgery being cleared to work out, it was just my way of saying like, you know what? My body has been through so much and it's done so much for me. Like this is my way that I'm thanking my body is moving it every day because I'm able to. I could have been an amputee and I could have not been able to work out. I could have died and not been able to work out. I can't run anymore. I can't do high impact, but I do things that I can do. Like Pilates and bar and modifying running workouts, squats, weights, everything. But we get one body and it's such a gift. And everything that my body's done for me, like I need to thank it every day.
That's beautiful.
So that's why I work out at 5 a.m. You can call me crazy. It's fine.
No, you're just super inspirational.
that is my time to thank my body and to sweat it out. And anything that's going, I mean, especially now with everything going on, like that is, I don't think about anything that's going on. Like that is my time to focus on my body. And I 100% believe that being fit, into each diagnosis really helped me with symptoms and energy levels and dealing with medications and just my overall mindset. Like my friends bought me a spin bike when I was going through breast cancer because I couldn't go to the gym because of immune levels. And I used to spin before every chemo treatment because I was like, I'm going to be down for the count for a couple of days, but this is my chance to like get my sweat in. Like I would watch Friends and just like cycle it out, like just sweat it all out, port in place, like nothing was going to stop me. And it wasn't even for weight loss. It was just for like your mental mindset. Like, I think you need to move your mind for your mental mindset. And then I think nutrition is a tough one. Mm-hmm. I eat very clean, but I still love wine.
Yep.
I went wine tasting for my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, by the way. I was so jealous.
Thank you. So yeah, I still love wine, and we had trick or treat candy at the house, but 80% of the time I'm eating pretty clean. I don't go to the extremes. I know that a lot of people go to the extremes. And that's great. I mean, if you choose to do that, I think that's great. You do you. You do what you need to
Everybody's do. Everybody's different.
But I just, from just not even from a cancer perspective, but just from like an overall health perspective, like eating clean and whole foods, it just makes you feel better anyways. Mm-hmm. And there's the additive, like getting rid of all the processed foods that have been linked to cancer. Mm-hmm. I think it's super important, but I maintain balance. I mean, I didn't fight for my life to be able to restrict my life. I work out because I love it and it makes my body feel great. I was told that I wasn't going to be able to do a lot of the things that I'm now doing. I've strengthened my left leg. It used to be 19 inches around and now it's about 21. And that's like solid muscle that I've been able to build at home.
That's amazing.
Thank you. It's been a non-skill victory and I love it. I mean, you can do anything that you put your mind to. And I think that you need to thank your body after coming out from chemo. And it is a long road, but I think that fitness and the right nutrition, is going to help. And I think for me, it was just a chance. It was a way to take control back of my life because when you're going through treatment, you're so wrapped up in like, it becomes this like new normal, mm-hmm. right? Is flushing your port, going to chemo, getting chemo, being down for the count for a couple of days, having all these medications on your counter, like not being able to taste food, losing your hair, like it growing back, dealing with surgery, recovering from, like it becomes mm-hmm. your life. And it's mm-hmm. such a weird fog that you're in. And then when you come out of it and you look in the mirror, at least for me, I was like, okay, it's time to take me back. Like it's time for me to give me love through nutrition and fitness. That's why I'm so passionate about it. Is because cancer could have taken everything from me and I chose to rise above and be stronger than it. So I think that's why health and fitness for me are non-negotiable.
Yeah. No, I think that's like it's just a testament to who you are and your personality as well. Like you mentioned earlier, like how positive you are and looking at like the glass is half full kind of thing. And you just taking taking your life back and being like, I'm going to thank myself for this as opposed to like, you know, swinging the other way and just, you mm-hmm. know, like go. And I'm sure people do go through bouts of depression, but like, you're not, you know what, I'm going to take control of this. I'm going to thank my body and I'm going to give myself the best body I can for the rest of my life. And I think that's mm-hmm. such a great view to take because like you said, some people kind of go to either extreme, like they go raw vegan and like mm-hmm. no alcohol, no gluten, no cheese, no nothing. And you know, like if that's what works for them, every person's body is different, but like for mm-hmm. your viewpoint and what you're doing is I think a perfect balance. So mad props to you. And if any of you are listening who follow her on Instagram, she has this amazing gym in her garage and I'm so jealous. She's got like she got a rack in there. You've got some free weights and like a spin bike and a whole bunch of other stuff. Oh my God. Yeah. That's the dream. That's my dream.
It's been a work in progress for many years.
Oh my God. I love it. It'd be great not to have to deal with people at the gym and just have like the rack whenever I want it.
I love it. I love it. It's been great during COVID for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. We like kind of created a little gym in our backyard. We don't have a ton of space, but it works out. I would still love like some heavy weights though. But so I guess moving on from that, like you had mentioned when we were talking about this young adult cancer charity, are you able to tell me a little bit more about that? Like,
yeah,
volunteer with them.
I do. So my third cancer diagnosis, my employer did not carry Kaiser as an insurance, okay. And I could not leave the Kaiser family. Just based on like all of my history with them. And so I was paying a premium out of pocket. I was paying $450 a month for my health insurance. And then my husband and I were also now paying for all this IVF stuff, which is not cheap. And you know, I was working from, I mean, thankfully at the time I had a remote job, but mm-hmm. I was like, we just can't afford this. We were paying for cold caps. And my husband was having to take, unpaid days off work to like help me through chemo and get through everything. So I was started researching and I was like, I need to find some sort of like, just a little assistance would be so helpful. Mm-hmm. And so I remembered that, one of my brother's friends that he went to college with, unfortunately passed away from osteosarcoma, in his late 20s. But he, when he was a young adult, he realized that there was no foundation for young adults. Because when you're in your early 20s to late 30s, sometimes you're just starting with a job. Maybe it's a startup. Maybe they don't offer insurance. Maybe you're paying premiums. And then all of a sudden you're diagnosed with cancer and you're like, well, I can't work. I have to take a week off work for this, or I have to recover from surgery. And some of that stuff isn't covered. Mm-hmm. And that stuff gets really expensive. And then all of a sudden you're a cancer patient in debt. And I just can't imagine. So he actually created, when he was still alive, the DAM Cancer Foundation. And DAM is DAM, and it's David Andrew Madden, which is actually the gentleman who passed away from osteosarcoma. So his parents now continue to run the foundation in his honor. And basically it provides financial assistance to young adults diagnosed with cancer. And it also helps fund innovative research for sarcomas and osteosarcoma in particular. And so you fill out an application online and the board decides how much they're able to give you a month. And so now they usually do a fall, and a spring fundraiser. I speak and share my story. But I just think that what they're doing for young adults, because I've connected with so many women who have been diagnosed in their like early 20s to late 30s with breast cancer. And sometimes they're dating or they're between jobs or they just lost their job because of COVID. And I just think it's so important that young adults are not forgotten, because I know that pediatrics are so well taken care of. And I'm not saying don't fund pediatric cancer, like fund where you need to and where you want to, but there's so much support for children. And then as you get older, I don't say that cancer is expected when you get older, but you're also at a different stage in your life. So when you're in this weird young adult stage and you're, like I said, between jobs, or your insurance doesn't cover it, or paying premiums, it's so important that I think that they're a forgotten age range, because that's like the invincible, right? 25 to 35.
You're going to die.
Yeah. And so they do just a really great job of fundraising for young adults that are going through cancer and cancer diagnosis. And I hooked up my Amazon account too, because they're part of Amazon Smile. So that's a great way to donate too. Cause I know everybody on here probably orders from Amazon on a daily basis. Well,
especially this year.
Yeah. So every little bit helps for sure, but they're a great resource. And they can be found at www.damcancer.org. If anybody wants to read a little bit more about them and about David's story, but his parents are angels on earth, and I help in any way that I can and share my story and just try to get the word out about the organization. So
that's really awesome. And I talk about this with, I feel like every episode, like it's amazing how close-knit and supportive the cancer community is. Doesn't matter what kind of cancer you've had. Everyone is just like open arms. What can I do? How can I help? This is who I can connect you with, or, you know, like et cetera, et cetera. And with every person that I've spoken with, they've just taken what they've learned and what they've experienced, their journey with cancer, and done something really cool and really good with it. And just having that drive to either help others or to help promote something that's really important to, you know, whether it's a foundation or starting a nonprofit, or
doing just random volunteer work. I think it's just so amazing. It's just kind of like, you know, like paying it forward and trying to make somebody else's experience maybe just a little bit better. And I think that's really, really admirable of you. So that's such a cool foundation. And, you know, thank you for sharing that with us. I'll make sure to add that link into the podcast information when I post it too. So everybody can check it out. Okay. Well, I guess it's kind of come up to about an hour. Just flew by. I usually ask, do you have any advice for listeners? Is there anything else? But you dropped in advice throughout the way, just the be your own advocate, get a second opinion. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Or like, is there like, I don't know if you want people to follow you, if there's a way for people to find you, if they have any questions or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, I will shout out my IG all day.
Yeah.
I am Linz_Persley. I'm a totally public profile, so you should be able to find me pretty quickly. I talk about my cancer journey. I talk about my fitness journey. So if you're not into fitness, my page might not be your jam, but
super inspirational. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. It makes me want to work out. I'm like, oh God, I need to work out today.
That's what I'm there for. I want to inspire. Mm-hmm. I think my last piece of advice would be like, if you are diagnosed with cancer or you are just finishing treatment, you need to remember you are still in charge of your faith, your fitness, your nutrition, who you surround yourself with, and your mindset. And you need to take care of you first. And, you will get through this. You will survive and lean into the cancer community because just as you said, we are here for you and to support you because it can feel so lonely after diagnosis and people just don't understand. But trust me, there are so many of us out there that understand and are wanting to connect and are wanting to share a story to make others aware of it, to help fund research, and I just, you're not alone. And if you're just diagnosed, my prayers are with you and I'm here for you. Reach out. I am down to Zoom, to chat, to FaceTime, to text with anybody. If you need somebody to vent with or to chat to who understands what you're going through. But you are in charge.
Oh, that's great advice. 100%. You're so wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and telling your story and your flexibility with meeting me and everything like that. It's really nice to meet you over Zoom. I hope one day that we can meet in person.
I know. That would be awesome. I'd be so excited. I have to meet Nicole too.
I know. It's so funny when Nicole introduced us. She's like, yeah, I've never met her, blah, blah, blah. But she's awesome.
We chat all the time.
Nicole's the best. I love her.
I know.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day. And once again, thank you so much for sharing your story. And everyone who's listening, just look in the podcast notes for how to find the DAMN Foundation, as well as how to connect with Lindsay if you'd like to reach out and chat with her as well. Thank you again, Lindsay, for sharing your story with My Cancer Story podcast. You can find Lindsay on Instagram at Linz_Persley. I will include that information in the episode notes. Also, you can find out more about the DAMN Foundation at damncancer.org. That is damncancer.org. That will also be within the episode notes. Please feel free to reach out and share your story with me via email at mycancerstorypodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach out to me at Instagram, on Instagram, at mycancerstorypodcast as well. Also, feel free to check out my website, www.mycancerstory.com. And you can find this episode and all the other episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you could, please review and rate my podcast on Apple Podcasts. That helps people find me and the podcast. And that also helps the ranking as well. I know it sounds kind of selfish, but I just want to reach as many people as possible. Thank you again for listening. Stay tuned next week for another My Cancer Story podcast episode, and have a wonderful rest of your week.